Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars. And this week, we actually do talk about cars. I misheard something my daughter said the other day, because she's only three, so she's not all of her words are entirely clear.
I love that era.
Yeah, it's very sweet, because when they mangle words in an endearing way. If they're still doing that when they're 14, you start to... worry a bit, but I misheard what she said, or she wasn't enunciating very clearly. She was talking about, in fact, as it turned out, going on a picnic. I thought she said pub lunch,
and I was we're going on a pub lunch.
Yeah, well, because I said, "What are you doing tomorrow with so and so?" She's going out with other people, and she went and she said, "Oh," she's sort of mumbling. And I thought she said something about pub lunch, and I was like, "What? Picnic? Oh, picnic!" But then for the rest of the day, I couldn't get out of my head the tune to "Today's the Day the Teddy Bears Have Their Pub Lunch." And I thought that was a much better song.
I'd love it. I'd love to go on a pub lunch with the teddy bears. Wouldn't it be a great afternoon?
Yeah. I mean, put it away, those teddy bears. Probably hell.
Oh, they'll be old school, where it's totally okay to have 5 pints and go back to your desk. Because obviously it's an office. It's, you know what I mean? Like, honestly, yeah, we just popped out for a drink. That's not a drink. That's, in my head, that's a session.
Yeah.
You can't go for a session and then go back to the office. I've done it before. Like, I genuinely fell asleep on my keyboard and did many pages of just like A-Z-A. Q. I fell asleep on my desk. I did. I was fully genuine. I was fully pissed. I had to have a lift home, and my boss at the time, the publisher, actually woke me up. I had my head resting on my what would it have been, late 90s iMac.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like one of those super clicky PC keyboards that they used to have back then. They're actually quite nice.
Yeah, I've got one. I've got one of those in front of me right now. Do you want to hear it?
Go. Oh,
yeah, I know.
See, I've got my special writing machine that's got a nicer keyboard on it than my laptop, because I've got one of those Macs with the really khaki keyboards, which, as we speak, I've got a can of air about to be delivered. Cause,
what, a compressed
my keyboards.
Air?
Yeah, which I
could have made you one of them.
What, with a compressor?
Yeah, I've got a compressor in the garage. All I do is take my keyboard out to the garage and just blast it.
Is it not a little powerful?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do not blow actual letters off the keyboard.
I have actually blown a Y off before, which, you know, sounds a bit wrong, doesn't it? But you know what I mean. You know when people say, "I see a bit of you in me"? I said that to someone the other day, to like an esteemed colleague, and it just sounded, the second I said it, it sounded so grubby.
Yeah.
And I couldn't walk back from that. I meant it as a compliment, and it just all went wrong. I see a bit of you in me.
I wouldn't say that to someone. I don't think I'd be comfortable saying that for the exact reasons that you have only retrospectively alighted on. But
well, I didn't retrospectively. I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. No, I just didn't. Because I'm a goon.
Look, listen, guys. Well, I wanted to say to you, heaven forfend this becomes a car podcast again, but there are quite a few cars to talk about this week, and I wanted to start, if I may, with that plug-in hybrid Transit that you've been driving.
Transit.
Now, I don't know why I'm interested in that, because it's a van. I have no need for a van, but I'm just kind of... It feels like plug-in hybridosity maybe something that vans doing a lot of local deliveries and going back to a depot for a period.
Yeah.
It could play to their strengths. So notwithstanding that I'm in no way in need of a van, what's it like?
Well, the first thing I would say is we get to drive a lot of cars, right, for our jobs.
Mm.
I bring a lot of cars home. my kids have never been more excited to go to school. Bear in mind, their kids have been back at school now for about a fortnight or whatever.
Mm.
And I took them back for their first day back in the van, three abreast. And I just opened the side door, and because it's a box fresh van, because it's a press office van, I opened the side door, sliding door, and just said to the kids, throw everything in there. Because, of course, it's just this gaping, huge space. They just looked at me and went, what, just put it in there? I went, yes, it's a van. Put it in there, slammed the door shut, got them in. They loved it. They absolutely loved it. They loved being up high. They loved this, the whole idea of having the big, the massive cup holders at the top there, the cubby holes in the top of the dash. But the... We drove to school on EV only because it's a plug-in, Fev.
How many miles is it supposed to be able to do alone?
That's a good question. I think it's supposed to do something like 37. So what I would say is I've been very, very excited to do this van. Oh, hang on, yeah. I think it's 25 miles WLTP, 35 miles NEDC, so it's quite low.
Right. Yeah, that's a bit disappointing.
And although it drives really well, and although it in the city it will do 30 miles of EV range, the problem is you can't fast charge it, and and it's expensive.
How much?
Hang on, I did write it down.
I'm just going to keep asking questions to put you on the spot.
Well, okay, so they mostly quote X VAT because it's a van, because
you can claim their VAT.
Yeah, with the government grant of £3,000, X VAT it's £36,000 from £36,000.
Okay, now of course. I don't actually know what a regular
it's quite a lot less.
Okay.
It's quite a lot less. By about 12, something like that.
Ooh.
A lot.
Even if you claim a heck, that's still quite a difference, isn't it?
Now listen, son, the problem that this van's got is I feel that the technology on board is useful, but it's come out about 4 years too hacking late. You see, it feels like a Chevrolet Volt in van form.
Right.
Which would have been great in 2014, 2015. But this is 2020. And I think the Transit's biggest issue is that the Peugeot e-Expert, the Citroën e-Dispatch, the Vauxhall Vivaro e, which are all kind of the same, have all just come out and they're all full EV and they do 211 miles on a charge. And they are 10 grand cheaper.
Oh, really?
In fact, they might be a bit more than 10 grand cheaper. They're significantly
cheaper. That's the bit that counts, isn't it? Because I sort of feel like vans, ultimately, they're bought by people who have businesses, big or small.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is the bottom line. And so it's all about cost. And I know running costs will be a part of that. But I mean,
And also the payload is bigger on those three vans I've just mentioned.
Is it? Oh, well, there you go. There's another thing.
And usually an EV van can't handle the payload, which has usually been the criticism. Like the Nissan ENV200, which has been out for, about 7 years.
Has it?
It's been out ages. Yeah, it just quietly does the little short journeys, and it's great in its own right. 124 mile range, but it's got 700 kilo payload. It's 20 grand to buy.
There's a Poncy flower shop up the road from my house, and they've got one. And I just think that is absolutely perfect, because flowers aren't heavy.
No.
They just do local journeys to deliver flowers to people.
Exactly.
And it sets a nice tone, doesn't it, for a flower shop? Yes, we're very environmentally friendly.
Clean air.
An electric van, you see. Yes, that'll be £30 for two daffodils wrapped up in a Poncy thing.
In some single-use plastic. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And I do think, we can criticise the ENV 200, but it got there early, like a lot of Nissan products. And for some businesses, it just does the job. And it's cheap. 20 grand.
So is it 20 grand?
It's 20 grand.
Oh,
last time I checked. Yeah. So, I think the biggest threat that the Transit's got, even though it drives really well, I have to say I thoroughly enjoyed driving it. My kids thought it was the Don. You know, like the 2 weeks before that, I had an Aston Martin DBX. My kids were like, nah, Transit. It just goes to show, though, isn't it, the novelty factor of a pickup truck or a Transit. Every time I get a pickup in, the kids turn the back of it into like a the Americans would call it a jungle gym. They just go and get planks of wood and stuff and turn it into some sort of, you know, dangerous adventure playground. It's awesome.
I think that there might be some scope in a website in this sort of crowded world of people trying to do car stuff online and in social media and stuff. But maybe there's a space for cars reviewed by our children. Not our children specifically, just children.
I suppose. I think that's a really, really good idea.
Because they have sometimes they have absolutely mad ideas about stuff. But also sometimes they cut through all the nonsense and just go, oh, yeah, but I don't like it because of this. And you go, yeah.
Oh, they'll call bullshit on something. If there's a piece of tech that's just pure dog egg and no one's going to really use it and it's just it's novelty for about the first day of ownership and then you go, that's a bit shit, isn't it? I mean, I've got the Audi e-tron, Sportback e-tron on the drive at the moment.
Sports.
So the old, you know, the old coupe SUV ting.
Yeah.
Two genres that you never thought would ever coexist, but...
I have a theory about this. Just try this on for size. Because superficially, I just do not understand this trend now for slanted back SUVs. And the Germans have led the charge, haven't they? The BMW X6 being a conspicuous example. It's like, why do you need an X5 with a smaller boot and less rear headroom? It's still an SUV or pretends to.
And it's about the same kind of weight still.
Yeah.
Still pulling and the same bulk.
Deeply obnoxious car. And then Porsche have got that, what's it called? The coupe, they call it.
The KN coupe or the KN
coupe. And Mercedes doing the GLC and the GLE coupes, in inverted commas. And then Audi, e-tron comes out. Okay, fine. And then suddenly there's a sloping backed version of it as well. Mm. You kind of go, what's going on here? And I suddenly realise, everything is moving towards SUVs, whether we like it or not. It seems like that's what the people want at the moment. And all of these sloping back SUVs are really just replicating what used to happen back in the day, where for a lot of cars, you'd have the hatchback and then you'd have the estate. And that's what they're doing now. This is like the Vauxhall Cavalier Mark II. All they need to do is a saloon version of the X6 or the KN, and they've completed the 1980s Vauxhall Cavalier range of body styles. Oh, and a convertible as
so
well.
So are they just bringing people around in a really long-winded, car R&D fashion to going, oh, by the way, all you want is a saloon that's high up or a hatchback
high up? It sort of makes more sense if you look at it like that. At the same time, it makes no fucking sense whatsoever, because I think a lot of these coupe ones, first of all, they're not coupes, but also they tend to be more expensive, I think, don't they? Is the e-tron... more expensive than the regular e-tron?
9 bags of sand more.
What?
Nine bags more.
Well, you see, that's where it doesn't make sense. Imagine if in 1987 Ford had said, now the Sierra estate is, whatever it would have been back then, £7,000. But the Sierra hatchback is £9,500. Everyone would have gone, tit off, that doesn't make any sense at all, Ford. And they'd have gone, no, you're right, it doesn't. But somehow, in fact, this is a wonderful scam. Because they can charge more for
What I would say, and I've got a review of this car out right now, so I'm going to plug it on my YouTube channel right now, if that's all right, Rich.
Go for it.
But it drives better than the original e-tron. I was a bit underwhelmed by the original e-tron. This is a little bit tighter and more responsive and actually more fun.
Have they admitted that they've made a load of changes to it, or is this just sort of natural evolution of a car in its lifetime?
They've made the axles decouplable,
from the body.
Yeah, exactly. They just, if you accelerate really hard, just it leaves the back motor where you were. No,
did you ever have that with like Hot Wheels cars or Matchbox, or whatever? Sometimes the floor pan would become detached from the shell.
Yeah.
And if you zoomed it really hard, then suddenly the body would fly off and the floor pan and wheels would just carry on. It's like that. That's very retro.
So it's weirdly, although it's a quattro, it sort of isn't most of the time. It's rear wheel drive most of the time. So it gets a little bit better range, and it seems to be the this one had the air suspension, which is optional. But it just seems to be a little bit tighter and more responsive in a couple of key areas, which is rather good. But there's no denying the fact that your boot's smaller. Yeah, rear headroom is lower because you've got a coupe roofline. It is more aerodynamic, but by an absolute gnat's pube. And it just leaves me going, hang on, so I'm spending a lot of money on a car which doesn't have a great range as an EV compared to a lot of its peers. You can't fit a dog in it, which is what a lot of people like to do, right? Or, you know, lots of weekendy stuff, go anywhere stuff. And it's still a five-seater. You can't put more than five seats in it. And I'm just kind of going, oh, it's a beautiful cabin. And
I
won't tell you anymore because it's all in my video.
Spoiling your review. But
basically, no, yeah, it's okay. But I do wonder when this weirdness is going to end with the whole, like, let's buy a really big... The other thing is I live around quite a lot of narrow back lanes in the countryside. Mm. It felt massive driving down back lanes. I felt like I was going to get the side creased by either Hedge or Discovery being driven the other way at 80 miles an hour while someone's texting. You know, kind of like, bloody hell, I'm going to get completely scrunched.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like, although I could, it was a very nice car, and exceptionally the quietest SUV, the quietest EV I've ever driven, I would say.
Really?
Yeah, it was so quiet. I mean, honestly, like closed library quiet. Okay, no, closed rural library outside of rush hour quiet.
The closed libraries are quite noisy because of all the ghosts. I saw it in that documentary Ghostbusters a few years ago.
Oh, yeah. Also, a closed library, usually there'll be some janitor type person with a polishing machine. You know those rotors?
Yes.
So actually, a closed library is louder. What am I talking about? It's a fully open library in a rural
setting. Get your analogies straight.
I was going to say, my analogies, as I've got older, have gone from like average to just cack, I have to say. They really are.
I thought you were going to say, oh, my analogies are as bad as a pirate in a wind chime ship. Sorry.
I realised the other day, right, I ran down the garden and sort of... I hit an uneven part of the garden where I felt my ankle going, and I was in my slippers because I wasn't supposed to be outside. I was just going to quickly put someone on the compost heap, and I looked around after I'd done it because I realised I looked like Johnny Depp, the way that he runs in Pirates of the Caribbean. What's he called? Jack Sparrow.
Yeah,
I felt like I'd just run to the other end of my own garden like Jack Sparrow, but holding a load of peeled vegetables.
Oh, hey, talking of pirates.
Yeah. We don't often.
We don't. Pirate Corner. Well, it's not really Pirate Corner. All I was going to say, do you know what I'm doing this week? Is I'm going, for the first time, I'm going to that Salon Privé thing.
Oh, are you?
At Blenheim Palace. And I didn't really know what to wear. Because obviously it's a bit poncy, and I wasn't quite sure what to wear. And I said, I've got a tweed jacket. And then someone I know who's been before went, tweed jacket? I'm going to tweed jacket. They'll think you're there to empty the bins. You need to wear, like, luridly coloured linen suits or something like that.
Oh. For fuck's
sake. Do you know what? I'm just going to go dressed as a pirate and claim that I thought it was fancy dress.
Please tell me you are going as Davy Jones.
I don't have a pirate costume. I suppose I can get one. Well, I'm going tomorrow, so I can't now. But yes, anyway, I'll report
just
back.
Just go dressed as like Robert Smith from The Cure, but without the white face.
Well, do you remember when you and me went to the GQ Car Awards? Was that last year we went to
it
that?
It was the year before.
We were
before.
A bit worried.
We were very worried because it was high fashion.
Yeah, but then we just agreed that we would both wear really frantically not matching things and try and claim to be fashion forward.
We did!
And I know that my shoes were jarring with everything else I was wearing, which also didn't quite get on with each other. And you had a luridly patterned shirt and stuff. We're just like, no, we're so fashionable that we look terrible.
Do you know what I did? I felt like after a couple of fairly stiff drinks once we were in there, I was rocking it with conviction. I was like, I'm fine with this. I've chosen this. I'm fine with it. I'm living with it. I'm loving it. And
I briefly thought about rolling one sleeve up, just, you know, just to go.
Just
yeah, it's
one.
A thing. It's a thing. Yeah, it's a thing now. Don't question it. It's a thing.
Well, it's
I saw Leonardo DiCaprio doing it.
It's a bit like we've done it before because In fact, someone on Twitter contacted me and said, one question I would really like is to answer is, when did you and Rich do the first Smith & Sniff and how did it come about? And I was going to say, actually, it came about when we went to Pebble Beach Concours.
Yes.
How many years ago?
It
was a what? Was it 8 years ago?
More than that. I think it was like 10 years ago.
Was it?
It was a long time ago.
And we went there and, I mean, A, it's one of the best places for people watching because those sorts of concourse events are. I mean, they're so...
extraordinary.
I mean, the Pantone-coloured corduroy trousers and...
Yeah.
The sort of, like, eccentricity wealth shirts, you know, I don't know what you'd call them, but, like, mad patterns. They're obviously very expensive shirts, but, you know... Yeah.
Combining 2, 3, maybe even 4 different checks in one outfit.
Oh, loads of hectic check. It's another John Peel session.
Okay, live in session tonight. Hectic check. But that's the thing, you have to go, can I just stop you there, sir, before you keep talking to me about your historic Hispano Suiza? I'm afraid I cannot hear you over the noise of your clothes. It's incredible the amount. And also loads of those, it's kind of Panamas, aren't they? Those kind of hats, rich old white man hats.
they all wear
at summer events like that.
What's that about? Because I don't know whether I'm ever going to hit an age where I'll go, yeah, sod it, I'll go for a dodgy Panama hat. I'll do that. What the hell? I don't know. Are we ever going
to
be
no,
there?
No, it's funny because I can't imagine it either. And yet maybe it just happens to you. You just suddenly go.
You're in before you know it. You're
in. Off to the Panama hat shop for me, but then maybe because you and I aren't rich enough, you know, you have to be sort of quite minted to really pull it off.
Well, that's why we need to make sure this podcast is incredibly successful, so we can go to car wealth events,
dressed in a Panama hat and 17 different patterns and colours at once.
Maybe we'll still be doing this in 17 years' time.
Imagine that. I just remember at Pebble Beach, that when we went there, just there was a place where they were just giving out cigars.
Oh.
And I remember being quite pissed. Oh, we sitting in a chair smoking a cigar and looking at all these men in Panama hats and lovely cars and thinking, life isn't too bad at the moment. I think this is all pretty satisfactory.
I think I've got a photo of you doing exactly that. And I might have been laughing at you. We were watching the cars go up on that plinth.
Yes,
you know, where there's
that's
confetti
it.
Thrown over them and lots of light clapping. Because you don't do heavy clapping at an event like that, I don't think.
Oh, no, it's cricket match clapping.
It's cricket clapping. Yeah, just sort of, there we go. Let's just do a little,
Just a little. Da, 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 da.
And it was a bit of that. And it was there was some ladies with parasols. It was...
But that was, because now it's coming back to me that, of course, the thing about cigars is they're a bit of a project. Because they just keep on going. They go out, you have to relight them. And it's just, unless you do the Will Smith, don't light it. It's, what is it? I just bite it. I can't remember the lyric now. That's really annoying.
Is that what he does?
Zigga from Cuba Cubar. It's for the look, I just bite it. I think it's the
lyric. My gosh, you remembered that. That's brilliant.
Is it from, that might be from Miami? Is that from Miami? That's what I forget.
Miami.
Which provides the answer to that. We, ages ago in a Smith & Sniff video, were talking about you wanted to know what temperature it is in R&B videos. All the women are in bikinis and all the men are in puffer jackets. And it's very hard to get a read on the exact temperature in the room or indeed outdoors. It just doesn't make any sense. Someone's either really hot or really cold.
The Hive app algorithm would just be off its face. Go, what's going on?
It's an unbelievable
graph.
What is
it, hot,
madness.
Cold? What's going on?
I'm going to look up on my bonky keyboard here. I'm going to look up the lyrics to Miami because within them... I'm not going to read them out for copyright reasons. I noticed the first line, according to the lyrics here, is yeah.
I was going to say
I think Will Smith puts a bit more oomph into it. But where are we?
Is it Why He's the Greatest Dancer as the background music?
Yeah.
Which we sang about in the last podcast.
Yeah.
It's like it's all linked.
Classic. Okay, so the lyric is, hottest club in the city and it's right on the beach. Temperature get to ya, it's about to reach 500 degrees.
That's
a furnace
in the
Caribbean seas. 500 degrees. Now, obviously, that's Fahrenheit. Okay, I'm just going to
You're gonna do the conversion.
Okay, well, I can't do Fahrenheit.
Hang on, are you
that's
gonna be
260 Celsius? That's hotter than an oven for cooking most food.
That's insane.
Well,
that's massive amount of evaporation and all sea life dead.
I would consider taking roast potatoes to that temperature if there wasn't anything else in the oven, but otherwise that would ruin a roast. Too hot,
Rich,
far too hot.
Rich,
so that, that's the temperature in that club. I mean, that's inhumane.
Well, people will die in the club, and yes. That's not the basis for a cool club night. Last time I checked.
Well, I mean, it strikes me that Will Smith has inadvertently gone for a night out inside an Aga, because that's no way. That's no way a club. They couldn't.
I've seen
the heating
Will
bills
Smith.
Would be insane.
He's massively into like a night in at the Steelworks. He loves it. Wait, you know, you trip over, you land in a load of orange glowing. Yeah, you're just dead, really. I think that... Are you going to be an official... I'd love it if you're an official fact checker for rap videos and you could just call out and just go... In fact, that could be a rule that comes in, and we've said it before, where you're not allowed to bullshit. It has to all be fact. So if a rapper says that he's earning 1.6 mil a day, you go, well, you're not. We've checked your tax records. It's nowhere near that high. In fact, it's not even a hundredth of that. So just, you know, wind your neck in. And you're talking about owning loads of Bentleys. Well, we've just looked at all of your ownership documents. I'm pretty sure you've only had one and you gave it back 2 years ago.
I've fact-checked myself.
Check yourself.
Because... and the lyrics about the cigar are not from Miami.
Oh, you've gone and ruined it.
Getting jiggy with it.
Na 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 na
na na na na na
na na na ding a ding.
Yeah, no, I can't.
Oh, hang on. Is that he's the great? Isn't that the greatest dancer background music?
It is Miami.
We've got all our Will Smith songs completely ruined.
Sorry, Will. I know he's a big listener.
He's in my family.
He's in your family.
He's one of my cousins or something. Yeah.
He's always hanging on in case we mention his 850 IS if you need a lift.
He's massively.
He's the kid in the drop, Will Smith.
Yeah. Smith and Sniff and Sniff. Oh, sorry, no. Smith and Sniff and Smith. Oh.
Ding, digga, ding, digga, ding. Digga, digga, digga.
We were talking about how do we get onto
Miami is And the Beat Goes On. I'll just check this as well.
Oh, fucking dun, dun.
Gone deep dun, down the Will Smith dun, rabbit hole.
Dun, diddle, and the beat goes on. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's
and
good.
Just so, cigar, right from Cuba Cuba. I just bite it. It's for the look. I don't light it.
I think it's because he understands lung cancer. And I think I dig that. I think that's probably what I would do.
Well, in fact, two lines later... Yeah, two lines later, yo, my cardio is infinite, ha ha. That's the actual lyric from the song.
His
cardio is infinite because he doesn't actually smoke, so that's good.
Cardio is infinite, as in, yeah. Oh, I thought it meant like...
Give it up, Jiggy, make it feel like foreplay, yo, my cardio is infinite, ha ha. Anyway, just don't make me rap anymore, it's embarrassing. What I was going to say is, I had a Project Cigar on the go at Pebble Beach, and once you've got it in your hand, and then I remember we were standing then in the crowd watching some of those cars going up on the thing, and I was really conscious that I kept almost like burning holes in the back of people's suit jackets and dresses and things. And I was just like, do not, because I was a bit drunk, and I don't be that guy who like puts a massive hole through a $5,000.
Oh gosh, I do remember it being. I'd love to go back. I'd love to do a live Pebble Beach report. Important one, detailed. But that's the first Smith and Sniff we ever did was there in a golf cart.
We just never seen
recorded on what was a very new iPhone of yours at the time. It might have been the very first iPhone, was it? iPhone 3?
No, because they didn't do video until about the third one, did they?
iPhone 3.
It wasn't, because it was some of it was filmed on my phone, and some of it you had a GoPro. We gummed a GoPro.
We gummed a GoPro. And I just wish I knew where that footage was, because there was a lot of footage of driving across a beach. And getting stuck and chasing seagulls and then getting stuck.
Yeah, it's a shame we don't have that. Anyway, now, what else was I going to say? Oh, yeah, cars.
Maserati.
The Maserati.
The Trident. One of my favourite car logos.
Yes. Yes. And so, yeah, I thought it was a sports car, but if you're going to be sort of getting to the semantics of it, they're saying it's a supercar.
I think
it
is.
But it has a V6, which is obviously a hard sell.
in supercar.
Oh, hang on. Don't let... 4GT? 4GT?
Well, again, I mean, people got a bit narky about it, didn't they? Honda NSX, is that a supercar? No, it's probably, you know, the original one. People always go, well, it's really a sports car.
They probably made the NSX a sports car instead of a supercar because although it was supercar quick, it was just too comfortable and nicely put together. Remember, to be a true supercar, things have to be a bit crumbly around the edges.
Yeah.
It has to be a bit ragged, even when new.
A friend of mine got into a tussle the other night. He messaged to a WhatsApp group that I'm in about cars. He got into a little tussle at night on some roads that he knows well in, I think, Oxfordshire, with a Ferrari F50.
Wow.
And he said it sounded amazing. And he thought, you know, when the driver opened it up, it was just incredible. But it's a road he knows really well, and he was able to keep up. And someone in the group went, oh, why, what were you driving? He went, oh, just my Focus. And
well,
he's got a ratty old Mark 1 Focus that he loves as his beta car.
It's a good car, the Mark 1 Focus.
It's a very
good car.
But even so, it does kind of reinforce a point that, I mean, I always think supercars are, in fact, in so many ways, shit. And they're not even that quick because you cannot unleash them properly on bumpy, difficult roads because they're wide. They, particularly older ones, they don't put their power down very cleanly. And they're just a bit of a nightmare.
Is it one
and
of those
fact,
things
a well-driven
where...
hatchback will just keep up with you.
Oh, hell. What, a Ferrari F50 on a back road versus a, let's say, a Focus ST? Not even an RS.
No, it isn't even an ST. It's just a normal one. It's like a 1.6 or something.
Can I just say, controversial, I think the Ferrari F50 looks like one of those vulgar slip-on shoes that men wear at Pebble Beach type events. Patent leather with a little gold chain across the front where you just go, hang on, is that a woman's shoe or a man's shoe? I can't work that out. Does it matter? I don't know. It doesn't look very masculine, but I'm not sure. I think the Ferrari F50 looks awful.
Do you? Oh, you see,
I think
quite
it
like
looks awful. And I remember
it
when...
It looks a bit odd with the roof off sometimes, but it looks a bit... Yeah, no, I like it, but it is a bit weird.
When Clarkson drove it on Top Gear when it was new and he had the roof off, I guess because he's about 17 feet tall, I think it just looked awful. But that's just me. You know, I've got awful taste in cars. I'm going to say the word awful again. Awful, awful.
Well, speaking of which, this Maserati. There was a live online reveal, which they'd obviously thrown a load of cash at because they've got all sorts of shenanigans going on. I only caught the end of it. And
I saw a bit of that.
Was really underwhelmed.
I was as well. It's funny you should say that, but why?
Yeah, exactly, but why?
Why was the underwhelming present?
It's not a bad-looking car, but...
No, it's not.
It feels like it doesn't bring anything new to anything.
Precisely.
Except it has another stab at trying to make three-spoke wheels acceptable and I think still fails. But it's okay. It's just not amazing.
It's exactly... oh, my gosh, it's exactly what I thought. I thought it does look attractive. It's not it's not over-embellished with silly extra winglets and blah and blah. But the problem is when you look at all the performance and what it brings to the party, right now you go, right, so... It's half as slow to 62 as a Tesla Model X, which looks like a computer mouse, and and it can fit loads of people and loads of stuff in it. I just think if you're going to bring out a supercar now, it has to be either the most pin sharp handling machine and sensory overload machine. Or it has to be so damn powerful and ridiculous that everyone's just going to laugh. Like a Veyron, you just go, look, it's got too many cylinders, too many radiators, too many turbos, but it's an amazing achievement. And I don't think it's any of that. So is it just going to fizzle away as quickly as it arrived? I don't know.
The other one was, did you see that, having been underwhelmed on the night of the reveal, the next morning, two or three people, UK car journalists, were on Twitter posting videos of it in daylight out in a square in Italy being revved up. One of them was our friend Alex Goy. Hello, Alex, who listens to this show. And he put a video
up,
Alex. And some other people did. And again, I was just like, is that it? It sounds
okay.
It just doesn't sound like anything. Yeah, it sounds okay.
What, does it sound like an Alpha GTV with a throaty exhaust?
Not even that. Okay. I think that would sound nicer. It didn't have that crackly edge to it that those have.
Which is weird, because you can make a V6 really, really good sounding, I think. I'm a fan of sixes. I don't have a sort of six prejudice like some people do.
Yeah, I don't like V6s much. It's probably one of my least favourite engine formats. Straight six, but V6s, again, and V6s, you know, there's some half-decent ones, but they're always a bit... Okay, yeah.
Well, it goes back to my baseline, my reasonable affection towards top-end Granadas and... there's another V6 that I was about to say, and it's just escaped me, damn it. Oh, I know, Buick Grand National. Yeah. I have so much respect for good V6s. But, yeah, it's funny, you had the same... It's exactly the same, because less than 24 hours after the Maserati MC20 was released, Lucid Air revealed their vehicle, or Lucid revealed their air vehicle, and... With images of it on the strip doing a 9.9 second quarter mile with four door, pretty attractive, 500 mile range, and you just go, that's why supercars have to step it up, or they'll go into extinction, or they're just for collectors who just buy anything that's heavily compromised and composite.
Do you think it's weird that the supercar end of the car market is seemingly as crowded with options for you to buy as like medium-sized hatchbacks? There seem to be so many of them. When you factor in all the small companies as well, it's almost like, and this is exactly why, as you were saying, you know, you sort of need to stand out, you need to take it to some extreme. And that, I mean, it seems like the power struggle is getting a bit silly. The next frontier will be the electric power struggle.
Yeah,
and it'll all get a bit giddy there. I mean, I guess it already is.
It's getting giddy with
Rimac and people, which we'll come on to in a minute, because there's been some news about them.
And the Lotus Ouija board.
Yeah, the Lotus Ouija board. Ouija board.
You all put your fingers on a glass in Norfolk, and then it all just spells out your doom.
When will this car be ready? Oh, that late. I think the other way to go is to just go to the sort of, I suppose, the Alpine thinking. I should know it's not a supercar, but just go, no, we think the power struggle's silly. We've gone super lightweight. And I saw, like, I think Maserati were making some claim about, oh, and our new supercar's light. And then I looked at it, it's like 1,600 kilos. And you go, well, it's not that light.
It's just not, is it? It's just not.
Gordon Murray is just going, I'm sorry, what? When he's just turned out a proper hypercar that's, whatever that is, under 1,000 kilos.
Gordon Murray's just going, you do realise that 1,600 kilos, that's like the equivalent of 800 linen shirts more than it should have in weight. in a cupboard. Everything's measured in thin summer shirts.
I presume that Gordon Murray has done some analysis on this, and that adding a vibrant pattern to a shirt doesn't add weight.
What, as in the weight of the pattern, the print?
Yeah, well, you think the print, because I know he likes a vibrant pattern, but you think a plain shirt might be lighter. I don't know.
I've said it before, I'll say it again. Look, Paul Smith's done some fantastic garments. Some of my favourite shirts that I own are a couple of Paul Smith's. But why doesn't Gordon Murray, you know, he's got his GMD, why doesn't he just do a little cheeky sideline in some interesting prints? Do it. He likes a GMS. Cheery print.
Yeah, he does.
Just do it. Yeah, GMS joined Gordon Murray shirts. They don't make them so thin that, you know, they're a bit see-through, so that you can just see every man's nipple, and it's like, oh, yeah. I don't want to see my navel or my nipples all the time. That's not right. I don't have the body.
But that would be a really good marketing angle as well, because you could go, GMS, engineered by Gordon Murray, shirts that are engineered by the man who did the McLaren F1. I mean, it's a good angle.
I'd love it. And actually,
we've digressed.
But it's always nice. It's always nice. It's one of our traits.
We're drifting out to sea as usual. But anyway, the only thing I was going to say is
offshore wind.
We're on the same underwhelmed page about that Maserati. I just don't see the point of it, and I don't want Maserati to disappear because I like the idea of Maserati existing. But at the same time,
I do.
They've got to bring the goods, and at the moment, they don't. I can't think that their cars are.
No,
fantastic, are they?
I think
you're
right.
It doesn't seem to add much.
It's certainly no changer of any games, but it is it is pretty and it is tasteful. But I'm still just left meh. I'm a bit meh about it.
It's meh. It's the very definition of it's a meh Zerati.
Oh my gosh! You've just written the headline. Amazing.
I just mentioned Rimac, and there's this rumour going around that Rimac are going to take control of Bugatti.
Yeah, massive news. Amazing.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It's really interesting because Mate, or Mate, depending on how you say his name, he's a lovely, lovely guy. He's always
Mate,
been...
like Pate, isn't it? Or is it?
Oh, is it Mate? Oh, there's three versions of his name already. Is it Mate, Mate, or Mate? Matinee.
Matinee.
Anyway,
Matey. Matey Rimmer.
Matey Rimmer. He's such an exceptional visionary, and he's still so young. I think he's 32.
Yeah, it's depressing, isn't it?
And he's built the company from next to nothing in under 10 years. I've been lucky enough to go there, but only once in Zagreb. And it's the stuff that they're doing. To see the Germans fighting over stakes in his business like they are, and effectively, from what I can gather, they're just going to like sort of give him Bugatti, and then in exchange for lots of R&D with EV throughout the VW group.
Yeah. So as I understand it, and this is sort of a developing story as we record this, but Porsche already owns a chunk of Rimac.
Yeah,
10%,
it's about 20,
I think.
It's 15. I think.
Oh, is it more?
Last
is it, okay.
It's 15.
Like. They want more. The Volkswagen Group wants more.
Yeah.
And to sweeten the deal, they will effectively hand Bugatti to Rimac via Porsche.
Okay.
And in exchange, they will get a bigger chunk of Rimac. So they don't lose control of Bugatti as such because they are giving it to someone who they then get a greater chunk of, if that makes sense. But what's really interesting is that that's clearly a sign, if this all goes ahead and if it is true, which, you know, small asterisk, might not be at this stage. But if it is true, what they're essentially saying is now Bugatti becomes an electric vehicle company.
Exactly.
And that, and to me, makes total sense. Because where do they go in internal combustion beyond what they've achieved now? Is sort of, where are they? 1,500 horsepower, something like that?
Yeah, from yeah, yeah. Well, what speed have they done?
Have
they done
silly.
300 miles an hour? Or have they done 280?
No, I think... I forget now.
I think it's late,
I'm sort
twos.
Of not that interested. They might as well go, and we've driven across the surface of Jupiter. You go, well, it's not relatable, is it? Well done.
Well, as
a
we've said before,
but it's not relatable.
If it was to be, if it was to, Chiron was to hard launch on the beach of Dover, and it has to go across the sea and get to France across the water with nothing but paddle tyres. That would be impressive. I'd like to see that, wouldn't you? Some water driving with the Chiron.
Oh, yeah, but then what if it ran over Charlie Borman, who's doing his Long Way Out feature that he proposed last week, takes out Borman and McGregor on their...
on their paddle Harley live wires, whilst getting minor shocks.
Are they water-powered, water-ready bikes? I thought, in many ways, they were just conventional motorbikes, and they effectively had to sort of see how far out to sea they could get before they sank.
But, oh, OK, I mean, so they park the Harley live wire, and Harley go, look, we'll still back you up, boys, so we'll give you a pair of V-rods, water-cooled, petrol V-twins. And they go, yeah, fine, put a snorkel on it, put some Submariner-type gear on it, you know, like an outboard motor where it can run underwater for a minute or two.
Yes.
I love all that shizzle. So you can just, if you get a bit of a submarine on, you can still leave the throttle wide open and hope that you go up rather than down. I'd love to see the practice session. I'd absolutely I remember going back to Rimac. I remember before Rimac set up the company Rimac, he had a couple of experimental cars. One of them was his BMW E30 that he built to do drifting, and it set a couple of really impressive times. And he did some vids of it online. And I was just starting to build my Enfield EV dragster, and I actually emailed him, and we emailed one another for several months, and he was really helpful, really, really enthusiastic about another person trying to do another EV thing. And I think that's where the similarity between me and Mate Rimac ends, because he's now in charge of one of the most valuable car companies, effectively, or technology companies, whatever you want to call it. And I said on Twitter, he's like an Elon Musk, but not so weird on social media. or slash dangerous on social media. And then I looked up Mate Rimac's Twitter account. He hasn't tweeted since 2014. So I think he's too busy, Rich. He's too busy.
Instead of bullshitting on Twitter, he's busy getting on with the job.
Oh, he's doing the shizzle.
Furthering the electric car.
Oh, yeah.
Development curve, and that's good. Yeah, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? He's there, and a lot of companies do come to him. He's done electric car stuff for more people than sort of being let on, I think.
Absolutely. His game plan is clearly very different to Tesla's because Tesla keep everything in house, whereas he's the other way around. He's like, I'm not interested in making my own car. I'm interested in underpinning all the other big cars. I don't need.
Well, he must be a bit interested in making his own car because he's done it twice now. But I think that's kind of a shop window, isn't
that's
it?
A really? Shop. That's totally a shop window. I mean, it was great. A couple of Geneva Motor Shows ago with the C2, I sat in it with him and he gave me like a really in-depth Rain Man tour of it. And it was incredible.
I thought you were going to say a really in-depth shoulder massage for some reason. But
what?
You went, what? I sat in it with him and he gave me a really in-depth shoulder massage. I don't know why I thought that.
Yeah, he as he was explaining the full spec of it, he insisted on hand-feeding me grapes.
I bathe your feet.
And we were on a revolving turntable with lots of flashing photography. And at no point did it feel awkward. It never felt awkward at all. I got to hand it to Rimac. I think this is exciting. Lots of people are going, that's sad for Bugatti. It's all over. It's like, well, yeah, but like you say, where could it have gone? And this is the flagship next frontier. And this is
It'll be 2,000 horsepower electric. And it's perfect for something like a Chiron or a Veyron or whatever the next one would be called.
Yeah.
Because they don't get driven.
Macron. What will it be called? Come on.
They draw their names from the past, don't they? So, because the Chiron was a driver for them.
Yeah.
And Veyron, what was Veyron? I don't know. But just Ron. I mean, Ron would be good. Ron. Everyone knows a Ron. Very dependable people.
They're strong as well.
Yeah, lend you some hedge trimmers.
You don't meet a weak Ron.
Weak Ron?
I mean like...
Photon. What, photon or proton or something. Physics-y.
Proton. You can't call it proton.
Oh, is that it? It's been taken, hasn't it?
That's been taken, mate.
Electron.
Oh, elect. Electron, as in like Ron. An election campaign. Please, elect
no,
Ron.
Not elect, elect Ron. Well... Anyway, it depends where you put the hyphen. Maybe no hyphen. but yeah, 2,000 horsepower electric car. It's not going to be driven. They just get titted around at low speed anyway. They're perfect for... But being able to boast it's got 2,000 horsepower, that's what it's all about. It'll be doing 10 miles an hour through Kensington or around, which, you know, Miami or somewhere, where it's 500 degrees anyway. Mm, and that's Miami. Bad for the battery pack. But it's okay because it won't go very far. I think electric power makes total sense for a hypercar. We just want really big numbers on paper, and then it won't be used like that at all. And
You're
rich enough to afford a Bugatti, you probably have got a driveway so you can plug it in at night.
I'm gonna put it out there and say that's definitely the case. Another new car that's exciting, the Nissan Z Proto.
Hmm.
What sorry, or Z Proto.
Z.
Mm. I, Z-proto. I, Z-proto. Proto. Z Proto. You know, for me, emotion. It's that thing, the designer talk. You know, it's always, for me, they evoke the emotion, you know, the feeling, the... visceral, the car, it talked to me, my heart did beat, I touched the car, I feel the car in my face. I love the car.
Do you like the Z-Proto?
I like Z-Proto. I think the rear three quarters is my favourite bit. I think that there is a really weird kind of... what's the word? Oh my gosh, I'm really thick today.
Horse, cheese,
what's,
tree.
No,
house.
What's the no? What's the thing when you have a deja vu? I've had a real deja vu with that car because I think the back end, the rear three quarters, just S13 Silvia. or 200SX, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah.
It's really S13, the rear light clusters and stuff like that.
Yes.
I think the front end is a bit of a grower. I can't quite see it fully working yet. Someone mentioned on Twitter, they thought they agreed, and they said it's because it sort of lacks a badge or some badge detailing, but I guess it's, they're saying it's something like 90% ready. The other thing is, and I do think it'll be cool, and I'm really glad the world is launching rear-wheel drive coupes, so that's great. But it does make me rewind the clock to 2013 and the Nissan IDX, if you remember that, based upon the Datsun 510 two-door.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That concept was just absolutely perfect. It does make me wonder whether or not they either should have done that one or should do them as a pair. Also, the other thing is, should Nissan launch this with the option of EV? Because Nissan is lagging behind in the EV stakes. It was an early pioneer, and it's gone a little bit quiet on the electric front when it really should be pushing.
For the record, I like it as well. I saw some people getting a Nixon a twist about it. I thought it was quite a nice-looking car. I know what you mean about the front. Mm-hmm. It's a bit sort of Aston-y, but then I think people are beefing about that front air intake, which is basically sort of completely unstyled. It's just a massive rectangle. And it's,
Basically
bother me. I don't know where you'd put the number plate, but, you know, I'm sure the production...
I would spray it on onto a big intercooler. You know when you can get a stencil when you order the car, you get your number plate stencil and you just spray it on with a rattle can.
Yeah.
I think it'll look mega.
Like you, when you see some tits try to graffiti a chain link fence and you just go, well, that's not taken, has it? It's too many holes. But I do like it. The thing is, though, you say it's nice to see rear-wheel drive sports cars coming back, and I do kind of agree, but at the same time, the problem is, everyone's going, oh, brilliant. It's because the concept, in inverted commas, is a manual box and it's twin turbo V6, isn't it? And everyone's going, oh, that's brilliant. That's fantastic. And it's not coming to Europe. So it's sort of irrelevant for us anyway. But the production one will be mainly for the US, I suppose.
Yeah.
Everyone's getting very excited about that. And you go, how many Supras, those new shaped Supras, do you see around? I mean, it's none. I think I've seen one on the road, aside from the one that we borrowed for a video.
Yeah, I've seen one private one.
And this is the problem for car companies. It's always, you get that thing sometimes where, you know, magazines like Autocar will get a bit of a bonk on about like some new car company boss, and they go, he's a real enthusiast. And I always think, well, that's great, but that's also terrible, because if they make decisions based on cars that enthusiasts think they want, they will never make any money and then they'll go bust.
Well, yeah, there's a reason why I don't run a car company.
Me neither.
Because I wouldn't have commissioned something like...
You do want people who understand cars at the top, because you look what happens when you don't. Because, you know, like, was that Mullally guy who ran Ford, seemed like he didn't really understand cars and made decisions based on that, which was not always great. But if people are too interested in cars, they just nerd out and forget that you also need to make a profit, or thousands of people lose their jobs. And it's just like the manual gearbox, rear-wheel drive sports cars, I think, for people in this country, they're like the theatre or the Church of England. They're something that people like to know exists, but they don't actually put their money into it when they need to. And so they're a complete folly for any car company to get involved in, sadly. Mm-hmm. You know, we all go, oh, brilliant, I'd love one of those, but have you actually bought one? Have you fuckers like? And so you can't really keep asking for them. You can't really keep asking for manual gearboxes, because you look at the figures for, you know, Ferrari don't do manuals anymore, Porsche sort of just clinging on in there, but it's usually like 99% uptake for the double clutch stuff.
And is so it really?
It's all well and good rapping on the internet and going, oh, I wish they'd do a manual box. And well, if you wish they'd do a manual box, you are now contractually obliged
to go
and buy it with your own money, or shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Sorry, I went off on one there.
No, I'm scared of the extinction of the three pedal car. I am. But if it does become extinct, it means all the previously made three pedal cars that are interesting, historically significant, good at racing, whatever, will be held in high regard, and that's that. So day to day we can dick around in a more of a white good car, more of an efficient thing, and then maybe at the weekend we're just going to drive more and more leery, dangerous cars, and I kind of like the sound of that. Sounds like a bright,
interesting,
future.
Larry. Dangerous cars become like the horse once the car became mainstream. They become a bucking dangerous hobby for
people who are interested in doing that, but you don't have to, and it all works out for the best. I guess in the end we get a better solution for everyday needs for those who aren't that interested.
I want a really bucking dangerous horse. That sounds like I'm swearing, but I'm not. I said bucking, guys.
Bucking, hell.
Bucking.
This is probably a good time to wrap things up. I know you put out a call last week for listeners' questions. Maybe we'll get round to those next week instead. That'll be a show or something. I don't know.
I will do. There's some really nice ones.
Just three things to tell you before we wrap up. One, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called Car Pervert, where there are many excellent videos, including, as we were talking about earlier, a review of the Audi e-tron. Say it.
Sport.
Back.
Do you know what? It's like a Justin Timberlake. I'm bringing sports back. Hey!
What's the second thing I have to tell you? Oh, second thing I have to tell you is that under my Sniff Petrol nom de plume, I have a book out called The Medium-Sized Book of Boring Car Trivia. So if you're very bored, make yourself even more bored by buying it exclusively from Amazon. And the third thing I have to tell you is that last week we claimed that the pop star Adam Ant once threw a car brake disc through the window of a pub. I've since fact-checked this, and we are happy to correct ourselves. It was, in fact, an alternator. Adam Ant threw an alternator through the window of a car. He also threatened people with a starting pistol. That's it for this episode of Smith & Sniff. Thank you so much for listening. As always, please remember to like and subscribe as much as you can. If you like it, tell your friends. If you don't, keep it to yourself, you miserable tit.
Thank you so much for watching. Listening. Definitely oral.
It's been very tight this week. Very slick, I think. We'll see you again for more of this same time next week. Until then, thank you very much. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Listen, guys.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.